Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Justin Herbert, Oregon quarterback. We've talked a lot about him, haven't we? But I often like to get an outside-in perspective on the people that are even in this state getting done what they need to get done. Kalen Cowler, who is a writer for Monday Morning Quarterback, NFL Sports Illustrated, is joining us now. Kalen, thanks for making time for us. What brought you to the Herbert story? Why was that on your radar?
I like to write about, some of the top quarterback draft prospects. I cover the NFL mostly, so I like to pay attention to who the top quarterbacks are. And Herbert was a name last season, and everybody was kind of hinging on it was him and Kyler Murray. Like, are they going to go to the draft? In Kyler's case, it was, is he going to pick the NFL? In Herbert's case, it was, is he going to come back for his senior year, or is he going to declare for the draft? And so I was paying close attention to him last year because I knew he was one of the top quarterbacks at this time last year. And so I just kind of paid attention to him, and he made a really unique choice to go back for his senior season. It's not something that we see a lot of players do, particularly quarterbacks. And, when there's so much money on the line, I mean, he would have been probably the second quarterback taken in last year's draft after Kyler Murray because the Cardinals were clearly in love with Kyler, so he passed up on what at the time was pretty sure millions of dollars to come back for a senior year where, you never know if you're going to get injured. You don't know how it's really going to play out. And as we saw with Tua, Alabama's quarterback, I mean, he was not a senior, so he had to play this year, but he got hurt in a situation where he didn't necessarily need to be playing at that point in that game. So it's just a risk to come back for your senior season. So I've always been kind of interested in him because he did make that unconventional choice.
He came back, and as you point out in the piece, 18 quarterbacks in the last few years taken, only two of them exhausted their eligibility. Will scouts see that as a positive or a negative, or how will he be judged?
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people in response to this article on Twitter were, going on about how there's no way he improved his stock. He should have gone to the draft, all this stuff. But in a scout's perspective, when it comes to quarterback, experience is one of the most important traits, which is why, there was a lot of concern and a lot of going back and forth on Dwayne Haskins last year. He was a single season starter. And you can tell he's been struggling this season, and he's playing like someone who started one college football season. So for NFL scouts, when they are looking at quarterbacks, one of the most important traits is their experience as a starter. So Justin, I don't think there's any way he could have really hurt his stock this season. Obviously, if he played like total crap, but he didn't. And certainly he did not put up any giant numbers that we've never seen before to really boost his stock. But from a scout's perspective, all of them really liked his decision to come back to school because that extra year of starting is so valuable, and it's just, you can't replicate it. So by him coming back to Oregon and winning some meaningful games for them and being in situations where he had to mount fourth quarter comebacks, I mean, that's experience that you can't, like I said, he can't duplicate it. And if he'd gone to the NFL, he would have been, those would have been his rookie quarterback reps, and where the whole world, the whole country is watching, and there's a much more pressure on you. So scouts really liked his choice to come back to school because they really do value that experience.
Kalen Kaler is our guest, Monday morning quarterback, covers the NFL for Sports Illustrated. Kalen, Marcus Arroyo, his coordinator, gets a job today at UNLV, but this was the first time that Herbert had his offensive coordinator back for a second year. He'd been through Mark Helfrich. He had been through Willie Taggart. He got a chance to be with Cristobal and Arroyo 2 years in a row. I still think there will be questions about, is he vocal enough? Is he a leader? What did you learn about that as you were reporting?
Yeah, that was really interesting. And, you know, because of the position he plays, there is a lot made of that leadership quality, because you need your quarterback to be the guy. You need your quarterback to be respected in the locker room and somebody that people want to follow and people want to play for. So I totally get why there is such a important place on that quality. But Marcus Arroyo was really interesting, actually, in my conversation with him and us talking about, you know, how did he get Justin to be more of a active leader and be more vocal with the team. And the two of them have a really close relationship, and he kind of told me that they would even do like worksheets to like work on their relationship together and like how they can like communicate better, like a workbook to kind of help them with that, which was really interesting, something I hadn't really heard before. But yeah, I mean, I think one thing that when evaluating Justin Herbert, or when, you know, if you're an Oregon fan and or just an NFL draft fan and you're looking at him and you're thinking, oh, no way, he should not be the first quarterback taken, I think one of the things to really take into account with his career is like what you just mentioned. He, not until his senior year was he playing in the same offense. That was the first time he was able to return to something that was familiar to him. Every season he'd been kind of starting over again. And that is a huge factor in determining, you know, how a quarterback develops and feeling comfortable. And as Arroyo said in my story, you could tell, you know, this year, because he did have a relationship with Arroyo, he had a relationship with Cristobal, you know, he was finally feeling more comfortable because he had that familiarity and he had kind of established that. So I think when you look at his stats, when you look at his play and watch his film, I think one thing he just should take into account is like the lack of stability that he had, and he was still able to produce at a really high level despite having to start over every single year.
You got your start at Monday Morning Quarterback working with Peter King. What was it like to work alongside Peter King?
It was great. I love Peter. He's an incredible mentor. He is hilarious, has a great sense of humor, and like has some really great stories. You know, I feel like I've heard all his stories by now, but because I worked with him for like 3 years and was basically his assistant. But he's great. I mean, there is nobody better to learn from in terms of, you know, building relationships and finding interesting and out-of-the-box story ideas and working hard. He worked harder than, you know, anybody I know in this business. So he was such a great role model to have.
When he started doing sort of that long diatribe that was the Monday Morning Quarterback that, you know, was his thing, I wondered, like, is he writing that in one shot? Like, is he staying up all night to get that ready for Monday?
It's a little bit of both. So there are, like, some parts that he can get done in advance. You know, if there's something he's writing about that Thursday night game, like, he'll write that ahead of time. Because that's already happened. Or, you know, if there was like a midweek coach firing or something, you know, he can get that done ahead of time. And like his travel note, he can get done usually ahead of time. So he'll like file a few sections of it early before Sunday. But the majority of it, he knocks out all in one kind of sitting on Sunday night. And it's crazy because he's like, you know, requesting players after their games. And so, you know, he'll get on the phone for 10 minutes with a player and then jump off and keep watching another game and then request somebody else and then get a head coach. And, you know, it's crazy. It's just a lot of multitasking.
Where will you do bowl season, and what will you do in the run-up to the draft? Where will the focus of the Monday Morning Quarterback be?
That's a good question. I'm sure we'll do a lot on Joe Burrow and Tua, because Tua is really interesting because nobody really knows what he's going to do right now. And he had a quote last week that kind of made it sound like he was leaning towards going back to Alabama for his senior year. So that one is really interesting to keep an eye on, because, you know, that's going to impact. There's a few teams that are really, you know, there's quite a few teams in the quarterback market this draft, so it'll be super interesting to see who the group ends up being and whether Tua is part of it or not, because I know, you know, even though he's injured, I mean, I still think he would be drafted in the first round. I still think he would be really sought after talent. So, yeah, that one I think will be interesting to keep an eye on.
Do you think Justin Herbert is a first-round guy, a second-round guy, a top half of the first-round guy? As you talk to scouts, what did you see?
He's absolutely top five pick, I think. Top five, top ten. He'll either be, I would say he'll be the second, he's absolutely going to be the second quarterback off the board, I would say. I mean, not absolutely, you can never know. But aside from, I mean, Joe Burrow is the hot name right now, but it's weird. The draft cycle is weird. So I could see, it just depends on who gets the first pick, because I could see Burrow mania kind of slowing down, and then I could see Justin rising, you know, steadily and slowly and kind of like quietly, just because he has the experience, he has the size. You know, you look at him and that's what the, you know, typical NFL front office would want in a quarterback. He's going to be durable. He can withstand injuries. So I could definitely see Justin sneaky rising to be the first quarterback kind of late in the draft. But I think right now it would probably be Burrow and then him, and, you know, Tua is the wild card here. But no, scouts really like Herbert. And I know last year the Giants did a lot of work on him. They were in Oregon for several days in a row, really looking at him hard before he had made the decision. And if you remember, the Giants picked second, or not second, but they picked the second quarterback in last year's draft. So that's kind of where he would have gone, I think. You know, if we can infer the Giants' interest in him means they would maybe have drafted him at the sixth spot overall last year. So that's kind of where he would have gone last year. And I don't think he's done anything to, you know, make a team not like him. I think if anything, he's exactly where he was last year, if not higher, because of the experience and the winning that he had this season at Oregon.
I appreciate your time, Kalen Kaler, Monday Morning Quarterback. And you're so right about that draft cycle, right? I mean, everybody's all about the Heisman right now and Burrow and LSU. And you're right. Over time, as these scouts start to evaluate, they get to the combine, they start looking at these guys in a vacuum, you suddenly go, okay, Herbert's bigger, look at his arm strength, and now you got a conversation, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. And I heard, you know, I heard a scout tell me, like, I've heard from several scouts that the offense that Oregon was running didn't necessarily, like, utilize Justin to his fullest. I mean, several scouts I talked to really wanted to see him throw deep more and run more.
Yeah, them and me, too. I want to see the same thing. I got so frustrated.
Yeah, exactly. So I think scouts see potential that hasn't been tapped in him as well, which is always good. And, you know, one scout said to me in a conversation after I had already written the story, he was like, you know, when Herbert gets to the combine, people are going to be wowed by his size, his look, his athleticism, how fast he's going to run, you know, all of that stuff. So he said, like, you know, the combine and the Senior Bowl, if he accepts an invitation to the Senior Bowl, those are going to be big for him to get in front of teams and, you know, really impress them.
You've got a Big Ten accent. I'm getting Wisconsin or Northwestern.
Yeah, I'm from Wisconsin, but I went to Northwestern.
Hey, there it is. Yep. See, you're losing your Wisconsin, but not all the way.
Yeah.
All right. Are you going to pay attention to the Rose Bowl, Badger fan?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, I'm more of a Northwestern fan, and I'm just kind of like, honestly, I'm just tired of the Badgers in the Rose Bowl like every other year because I'm jealous as a Northwestern fan. But yeah, of course, I'll watch.
All right. I appreciate your time. Good work on the Herbert story.
Thank you. Have a great night.
All right. There she is. Kalen Kaler, Monday Morning Quarterback. Could be a carnival game. Where are you from? Because she had a little bit of the... Did you notice that? Did you pick up the little Wisconsin in there?
Just a little,
just
yeah.
Just a touch. It was like she used to be from Wisconsin, but then she went to the big city. That's what I was getting.
Yeah, you nailed that. That was impressive.
Carnival. It could be a carny, is what I'm saying. Is that a good thing? I don't know. Coming up, our 2 at 2, two biggest things in sports, and then we go to Vegas. I saw a story today that shocked me. I remember being in college. I remember what college cost. I remember that going to the bookstore and buying my books was painful. And it was even more painful when I went to go turn the books back in to sell them back to the school. I was an English literature major. I had all these wonderful books that were like Hemingway, Melville, Hawthorne, and they would charge you like $35 for the book. And then when they bought it back, they give me like six. Like, I want that conversion. And I can just remember going back through the line when you go to sell them back and them going, we'll give you six for this one. And I'm like, no. I ended up keeping a lot of them. I still have them. We have a bookshelf at home with a lot of books that I don't read anymore that are on it because I like to line them up and show them off to people. That's what Bobby says. And those books are on that shelf. Well, Portland State has a Principles of Economics class that has a book. The textbook is $280. It is written by a Harvard University Economics Department chairman who was the former advisor to Mitt Romney and President George W. Bush. And it contains a segment, like a section in the book about uncompetitive markets and monopolies, like how few dominant players can influence prices. Some of the students are finding it ironic that a book that is charging students $280, and by the way, students are forced to buy those books, right? Do you have to buy the book?
Most of the time. Some professors will make it where you don't have to because they will empathize with the students, but sometimes, yeah, you have to have it.
The dude who wrote the book, guess what his royalties for this year will be on that book at $280 a copy, sold at universities across the country?
A million? I don't know.
$42 million.
Good Lord.
$42 million. He makes no apologies. He said... the Oregonian asked him in an email, would you ever write an open source textbook? Why or why not? He responded with, let me fix that for you. Would you keep doing your job if you stopped being paid? Why or why not? They should stop carrying that book.
What's even worse than that is I guarantee what they'll do is they'll have the revised edition that's the same content, but they'll swap chapters 3 and 9 so you can't sell it back.
Textbooks, the price of textbooks climbed 812% from 1978 to 2012. What did it cost you to buy all your books this semester or last semester?
This term, it cost me probably about $50.
That's not bad.
Not bad at all. I've been really lucky when it comes to Portland State. When I was in Alabama, it was a different story. But in Portland State, I don't think I've had to spend more than that in a term.
I just don't understand. In the e-books era, Why has anybody got a hardcover book anymore that they're selling to a student?
But even the ebooks, that's the biggest part that I don't understand. I had to pay for an ebook like 2 terms ago. It was like $45. For what?
Yeah. Well, they're saying the companies that put the books together say it costs them $500,000 to $3 million to create the book, even if it's an ebook. Even if that's the case.
And it's not.
What are they doing with... I mean, I keep thinking about higher education, right? What do they do with higher education? They tell your students, here's the cost of going to school now. By the way, we're a business, so we're going to charge you everything we can. And in the case of Portland State, so many international students, they're paying like a premium to come to school there. That's why. that changed a few years ago as I saw the international student became coveted because that international student doesn't know. Like, they're coming from another country. They're probably wealthy enough to go to school in the United States, so the money isn't a big deal. And Portland State and others are just saying, all right, we're going to take all these international students and we're just going to charge them blue chip prices because we need to make money. Then the cost of tuition, that living. And then you go, I don't know if this is your case, but we used to go through the student union and the university used to lease out space to credit card companies in there. And you walk by and they'd want to give you like a free towel or they want to give you a water bottle. And I always walk through there and go, we don't have jobs. Why are you giving us credit cards? They give you a credit card. No job, nothing needed. Just your name and your social security number. Why? Because they knew that they could get you for $2,500 or whatever you'd run up as an irresponsible student and mommy and daddy would pay it off. Higher learning, baby.
Yeah, it's basically having a non-willing cosigner right there.
Yeah. That's higher learning. I don't know if there should be laws against that. I don't know if there is a law. Maybe somebody did come up with a law that says you can't have a credit card company inside of a student union on a public school.
Yeah, I've never seen that at Portland State.
That's good.
Yeah.
They used to be every 5 feet where I went to school.
Well, I mean, we get it all in the mail still, but not set up in the middle of campus.
Yeah, I'm walking through. I'm just trying to buy my overpriced books and go to my overpriced class, and I'm getting a free beach towel. Why not? I'll sign up. Little water bottle.
Hey.
It's free. No interest for the first 6 months. Oh, hey, Mom, I got a credit card. Why did they give you a credit card? You don't have a job. Mom, I got the bill for my credit card. what else? What do you see? Because you're living it. Tell us what it's like.
The increase in tuition, I think, is the biggest deal because you don't have to have a degree to be successful, but it sure helps. And along with that, in my experience, they've been pushing grad school like no other the past term for
really?
Me. We've had a conference about it. We get a newsletter in the mail or in my email.
They want you to go to grad school.
Yeah. And they're saying, we can help you apply. We can help you do all this. They're pushing it so hard.
Your money. You're a customer.
Yeah. And it's like a lot of my professors only went to grad school because somebody else would pay for it for them. And I think that it's better, unless you know exactly what you want to do after your undergrad, to go to graduate school, wait so that you can be sure and then maybe go back and get it later on. But that's a really big commitment, especially when you already have so much debt from your undergrad.
That is a huge financial commitment. And, you know, the people I talk with, I'm super tuned into the cost of education because, you know, three daughters. But the people I talk with keep telling me you're going to see market resistance, where you're going to see more and more students who are just saying, I'm priced out. I can't go to college right now. I'm going to have to wait to go to college. And that we should see some kind of flat line with the cost of education. But based on where it has been, like, I'm not sure that's going to be true. Like, I'm going, okay, I hope so. Chris is called in from Salem. Chris, tell us about credit cards and campuses.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been in school, but I remember my first year in school. They would send out Adriana was saying, they would send out the credit cards pre-approved and ready to go in your mailbox. I think I got three that year. Pretty small limits, maybe $1,000, but it only took me a month to ring it up with pizza and beer, and then have to spend the next few years paying it off. But I think they had a law that came out maybe a few years ago or something that said that they couldn't do that.
I'm glad.
Maybe that was only with, they're sending credit cards. I don't know if that was with private institutes or state schools. But
that makes me happy because it always bothered me. And I'll give you a story. Like, you know, I played baseball in college. I was an English literature major, but I had also worked at newspapers but I didn't have time and I didn't have the right schedule availability to be part of the student newspaper. Okay. I was an aspiring journalist, but I was an English major, not a journalism major. So I got together with my friends and we started our own campus newspaper that would be in competition with the existing campus newspaper. One of the episodes that we did or issues that we did that I thought was really good focused on the irony in higher education. The credit card companies being inside the student union, the rising cost of education, and by the way, it was nothing then compared to what it is now, and the idea that often you had students that were paying full tuition that would attend large courses that would occasionally be taught by an advisor that was an assistant professor, or the lead professor wasn't always there. And we kind of focused on like, okay, how can you chart? You can't do that. You can't say, come see the Rolling Stones in concert, and instead you get like the cover band playing the Rolling Stones. You don't, that doesn't work. How does that, how come that works in college? So we put that issue out, and we got a lot of feedback and stuff, but the thing that I got out of it was I was getting my college education. Part of it was provided by me and my friends and things that we were doing outside of class. And later, years later, when I got my first or second or third job in newspapers, and that came up in one of the interviews, and they were like, that showed a lot of initiative. And I was like, hell, we didn't know what we're doing. I didn't think of it as a job thing that would go on a resume. But the newspaper people liked it. They were like, while you were in college, you did what? You did your own paper? So I always, like, my kid today, I'm driving to school with her, and she does a lot of co-curricular stuff. She's involved in a lot of different things. And I told her, I said, you know, are you doing the things you love to do? Are you happy doing them? Because she was saying, it takes a lot of time. I'm doing this. It takes a lot of time. And I said, just do the things you're happy doing. Because in the end, you don't want to do something for to make somebody else happy. You know, do something to make yourself happy.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.